In this episode of Fictional Hangover, we talk about killer clowns with ice picks, huge knives, crossbows, circular saws, pitchforks, a second crossbow, axes, chainsaws, machetes, knives, fire, rifles, a sporty two-seater, nooses, and scalpels in our discussion of Clown in a Cornfield by Adam Caesar, narrated by Jesse Valinsky. Everybody, welcome to Fictional Hangover, a podcast about young adult and new adult books, series, authors, and voice actors that is full of spoilers. I'm Punchy the Clown. I mean Amanda.
And I'm Icky the Clown. I mean, Claire?
Icky the Pants Optional Clown.
Ta-da! And today we're going to discuss Clown in a Cornfield by Adam Caesar, audiobook narrated by Jesse Valinsky.
Standard disclaimer, if you haven't read this book, please remember that Fictional Hangover is all about spoilers. If you haven't read or listened and don't want to be spoiled, stop listening to us and go read or listen to the book. Then come back. If you haven't done this but want to pretend that you have, or if you don't care about spoilers, or if you just like the show so much that you don't care about any of that, then listen
Yay!
Clowns! Yes.
It is.
That's our song.
Today. Because are we not dressed normally?
We're clowns. No. No. But I need to apologize because I keep putting my clown nose on and then taking it back off, but it really hinders the air coming through my nose. So I'm just... Yes, sounding
that's your
like
clown
this the
voice.
Whole
I love
time.
It. You need to keep it up. I mean, especially when we get to the really serious bits. That's perfect.
Yeah, it'll be perfect. Also, I'm afraid I'm going to have to take it off because I'm a little cross-eyed looking at it.
You've got your look.
So, yeah.
You've got your look.
I should probably take it off. And I've got a lovely hat on, and you have a lovely hat
on. I'm dressed up to the nines. Makeup's really all done. Great. Our hair's all nicely done, you know. Because this is an audio podcast, so of course we're going to get dressed up.
Right. Well, you know, we do have one Patreon bonus
member currently. We do. And they get to see the videos.
Yes, they do. So really, we're doing all of this ridiculousness for Constance, our Patreon bonus member.
You
but you
too.
Know what? You can have access to all of this magic, too. All you have to do is join our Patreon bonus tier.
I mean, to be fair, though, I'm not going to sell it purely on the videos. There is other content that gets posted in the Patreon Facebook group.
That's true. But the recording videos are very, very lovely.
Delightful. Delightful.
I think.
It's unedited as well. So you get to see all.
Right. Because if I have to start... if I have to start editing video, I'm going to jump through the window.
But you'll land on a huge trampoline and then bounce off the huge trampoline into a huge vat of custard in a very comical way.
Yes.
And no doubt, because your name's Punchy the Clown, the first passerby will get lamped.
Right. Yes. All of this is accurate. So anyway, go and join our Patreon. We have another Patreon member, Drew. So shout out to Constance and Drew for joining our Patreon. But Drew does not get to experience the videos. Gotta upgrade for that. But we still love you. We still love you and appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you, Constance. Thank you, Drew. We do appreciate it. If you too would like to be a Patreon, it's dead easy.
It really is. It really is. Go to patreon.com/fictionalhangover and choose your favorite tier today.
In fact, We'll pause. We'll do it now.
Yeah, go ahead. Go do it now. We'll learn to juggle or something while you're
juggle.
Gone.
I do keep trying, but it's a skill that I don't think I will ever possess. No.
No.
What would be your surface act then? Miming, tomfoolery, unicycle riding, tightrope riding.
Ooh, unicycle riding. Yeah. I've tried to ride a unicycle. My brother-in-law has one. It's hard.
I can imagine. I can imagine you going to like an estate sale, seeing a unicycle, looking at it for a good five, just standing and side-eyeing it for a good 5 minutes and going, yeah, I'm going to do it. And just buying a unicycle.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Surely that's plenty of time for every listener to have gone
twice
to our Patreon page twice and signed up. Twice. So thanks. Thanks for that. Thank you. Really seriously though, thanks Constance and Drew. We appreciate you. We really do.
We were giddy. We were like, ah! Yeah, we made noises that only dogs bats can hear.
We did.
Anywho, let's get back to clowning around. Do you have any background information for me this week, Punchy?
What's your name? Icky? I keep wanting to call you Itchy.
Maybe that's my true calling.
Maybe you're Itchy.
Of clown name.
Yes.
It's supposed to be Icky, the clown.
Yes.
We did a name generator. We didn't pick them ourselves.
No, we should share that with everyone. Okay. Anyway, yes, Icky, Itchy the clown. I've got some background info.
You'd go to the doctors for that.
Oh.
Get like a dual treatment. That's not nice. Moving on. Move on.
All right. So from from cemeterydance.com, Adam is asked, what was the inspiration behind the story? There are a lot of ingredients in the soup, from that rash of clown sightings a few years ago to the ideological and social anxiety that people have been facing. But the main inspiration is slasher movies. Yes, there are literary slashers, good ones, but it's a filmic subgenre. I wanted to tap into that without writing a book that felt like a novelization or felt like an expanded screenplay. Specifically, I'm working in the teen whodunit slasher subgenre. It's tricky because there's a lot of expectations that come along with those types of stories, and the balancing act of a slasher in general is ticking enough boxes so that it functions like the thing, but also add enough shading in with your characters and your twists that the audience never gets bored. Even if they're enjoying it, you don't want them to be like, oh, well, I've read/seen this before, because that leads to complacency, or at least a lack of stakes. There's a final girl here, but she's taken from no one mold. There's a lot more variation to the archetype than many would have you believe. So that sounds very educated and reasonable.
Yeah.
But then, he mentions that there's a film adaptation in the works, but before he can say much more about it, he's slashed across the throat from behind.
Womp womp.
Uh-oh. Womp womp. I don't have that sound effect on my phone anymore, so I can't do it. Yeah, got rid of it.
That felt very academic in his analysis, and I'm like, okay, that's nice. But you know what?
Right?
I just like the whole 90s slasher teen movie feel.
Yeah, don't get into over my head with your descriptions.
The shadow is a shadow.
You know?
The killer clown is a bastard. Let's just leave it there. Let's not overanalyze this.
Right. I mean, I am all into terrible horror tropes. And, like, what is more tropey than a murderous clown killing teenagers at a drunken party? Nothing.
Perfect. He said he hasn't written it to be a movie, but it does read like it would very easily be a movie. But, yeah, okay. Initial thoughts. Is it the tropiness, the murderous, the killer clown, teenage drunken party? Yeah? Do you know, I was...
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's all it takes.
I was in because Jesse Vilinsky narrates it. And Jesse Vilinsky is friend of the show, and we will support her in anything. And then when we... It just so happened to be exactly as we were talking about what we were going to do for October, that she said, I've just done Clown in the Cornfield is released today. And we were like, yes, perfect. So I came for Jesse Vilinsky's narration, but I stayed for that 90s horror movie.
I love it. I think I listened to this book in one day.
Sip.
It's great. Good job, Jesse.
It was definitely two sittings. It was probably... I tend to listen mostly when I've gone to bed. So it tends to be like it'll have been cut into two slots. I've done one night and then another night. So it'll have been in less than 24 hours in two pieces. But I've listened to it and I've read it, and both of them were enjoyable.
I did half and half. I listened to maybe a little bit more than half of it, just doing stuff around the house. And then later in the evening, I turned to the book and read the rest of it. And it was great.
It was a good read. It was a really good read.
I enjoyed it. So shall we dig in?
Okay, that's it for fictional. Sorry about the summary. What? I feel like we just analysed and discussed it right there.
We did. We really did. Okay.
I remember a few years ago when the clowns were everywhere. We had a massive rash of them in our city, and they were standing outside of kids' schools, like little kids' schools. Why? Why would you do that?
For shits and giggles.
The car gone.
For honks.
For honks and toots.
Yes. I'm in it for the honks and toots. Okay. At a reservoir, a bunch of teenagers are goofing around. Cole is standing on the shore, and Victoria, his sister, is trying to get him in the frame on her phone so she can live stream his antics. Janet is watching them both, annoyed, and takes over because Victoria is technologically naive. She signals she's filming to Cole, who takes a not very graceful leap into the water. Matt, sitting behind, cracks open a beer, while Ginger barrels past on her skateboard, but falls over the edge of the reservoir and into the water. She takes time to resurface, but she finally does, minus her bikini top. This, of course, signals the start of the party. Hey, topless babes and beer. Janet is still live streaming, and Cole is the star, flirting with Janet's friend Ronnie. However, it is Victoria, edging around the reservoir and about to dive in, who steals the stream. Janet, watching through the phone screen, can pinpoint the moment when the dive changes into a fall. When Victoria resurfaces, it is with her face down and her arms wide. Phone forgotten, it live streams the sky until the battery dies. But not before the comments pour in saying, oh shit, that girl is dead. And then there's the clown honks. Ahooga. 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 That didn't happen. That didn't happen. We're adding some levity to the situation.
No, the clowns aren't even featured yet. We're jumping ahead.
We are. I'm sorry. That was sad. Yeah. That was terrible and sad, and it's just like a great prologue to murder someone, you know, before the book even starts.
We like somebody to die before the book properly starts.
Yeah, we're a fan. We are fans.
Exactly.
Immediate murder.
We're fans of killing immediate murder is our bag.
Yes.
That's our trope.
Yes.
Okay. 1 year later, Quinn Maybrook and her dad have moved to Kettle Springs, Missouri, from Philadelphia, so he can become the small town's doctor. While unpacking, Quinn thinks about her mom. She can smell her in the old ratty sofa, and it almost brings her to tears. The move was a fresh start for her and her father, especially her father. Plus, it was a package deal. He got the medical practice and the deed to the house. Quinn would miss her old life in the varsity volleyball team, but she understood the motivation behind the quick move. No one in Kettle Springs knew her mother had slumped over in the bleachers, then puked down her chin at regionals. They didn't know she died of an overdose. Receiving a text from her friends back in Philly makes Quinn sad and also highlights the shockingly bad Wi-Fi service there.
Ooh.
Didn't get that in 90s slashes, did you? Terrible Wi-Fi. That's the horror story, the bad Wi-Fi.
It's terrible.
It only gets worse. It is. It's awful. It only gets worse when she spots her dad talking to a boy around her age. Oh, embarrassing.
It's terrible. Oh my God. It's dreadful. Oh my God. It's worse than the Wi-Fi.
It's like, Dad, no. So looking out her new bedroom window, it gets even worse when she sees a creepy clown mural blistered with age on the old beer pen factory across the street. Her friends back in Philly would get a kick out of it and tell her to get some damn curtains.
Yikes. Bad Wi-Fi and a clown across the street? No, thank you.
That's it. The end. We don't need anything else. That's horror! A horror story in
the
itself.
Horror!
Oh!
The next day, Quinn heads to her first day at her new school. And on the way, she meets the boy her dad spoke to, their neighbor, Rustin Vance. They make small talk, and Quinn finds out that the recently burned down Baypin factory used to make corn syrup, but the refinery closed and the town kinda went with it. Wah, wah.
Wah, wah.
She also learns that the creepy clown on the side of the building is Friendo, their mascot.
Yeah.
Yikes.
What a stupid name.
It's terrible. Putting a pin in that
Friendo
story.
Friendo the clown. It's almost as bad as Itchy or Icky.
Oh, I don't know. Itchy. Icky Itchy's pretty bad. Friendo's fine. Anyway, putting a pin in that story. And Itchy Icky the clown. Quinn heads to the school office and gets signed in. At her locker, Quinn meets Ginger, who is dressed differently from everyone else and is therefore intriguing. As she's standing there, a boy walks down the hall like he's in some kind of slow-motion hair commercial. It's Cole. Ooh, swoon, it's Cole. Ginger says they used to be friends when her hair was lighter, and he wasn't an arsonist. Wah, wah. So many sound effects are going to happen.
People change.
Yeah.
People
yeah,
change.
Man. Shouldn't have gotten that haircut, Ginger. Or shouldn't have gotten that dye job. Cole might
back
not
in seventh grade or something like that.
Cole might not have become an arsonist if you didn't dye your hair.
It's a butterfly effect.
It is.
Dang it.
It is.
So it's not a totally terrible start to her first day until Quinn is late for her first lesson, listed only as science. And the teacher, when she enters class, is berating the entire room. It's something about Founders Day celebrations not preventing a test on Monday or some such nonsense. The teacher, Mr. Verne, is seriously losing it. Janet is being all mature lawyer with him, and Cole is asking to just get on with the lesson. Tucker keeps saying he studied real hard about food and stuff for the test, and Mr. Verne is getting more red-faced and angry, calling them all a blight on the community with their Wi-Fi and their cell phones, etc., etc., blah, 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 that they will.
Oh no. With your Wi-Fi and your cell phones, how dare you?
Judgy McJudgeson over here. So, the situation is absurd and it's tense and it's making Quinn give a small laugh which throws her in the line of fire. Cole, Janet, Tucker, Ronnie and Quinn are sent to in-school suspension, whatever the hell that is. Ronnie has her phone confiscated and they are all banned from Founders Day. Again, whatever the hell that is. In the in-school suspension room, Quinn finds out a lot about this group. Ronnie reveals that she gave Mr. Verne a decoy phone, so ha! But she didn't get his rant on video for their YouTube channel, so wah wah. They are trying to reinvent Friendo as a homicidal clown in their videos. Because why the hell not? Cole burned down the beer pen factory after getting too drunk the previous week. But it's his dad's factory, so, like, whatever. And Quinn is invited to Janet's post-Founders Day party.
This is great.
Yay.
This is great.
It's just
Do we need to have a discussion of in-school suspension later on? Remember that. That evening, Quinn and her dad eat dinner in the Main Street Diner, which is stuck pre-year 2000. Her father awkwardly diagnoses people and introduces himself as the new town doctor. But they don't have a problem with her father's conversation. They have a problem with Quinn. They are staring her down. Their waitress, Trudy, couldn't give two shits about them. Then Sheriff Dunn comes in. He's a massive man who looks prematurely aged, but dominates the room like Cole does at school. At one point, he gets up and through the diner door has a stare down with Janet and Ronnie. When he's returning to his booth, he stops by Quinn and her dad's table, inviting Dr. Maybrook to the town meeting that night, which he politely declines. Sheriff Dunn then gives Dr. Maybrook a folded piece of paper that they look at when he's gone. It's a flyer which reads, "Make Kettle Springs Great Again." If you make anything something again, I automatically just hate you and want you to die.
Fair.
Making things great.
Not gonna argue.
Has just ruined. It's been ruined.
Nobody can ever wear a red baseball cap ever again either.
No. Ruined.
At the meeting, Harlan Jaffers is having trouble controlling his constituents. They aren't happy with his management of the town, the downsizing of the Founders Day festivities, and the lack of advertising to bring tourists in to help local businesses. Or that the fire engine was damaged putting out the fire at the factory. It isn't until Harlan mentions Arthur Hill is considering attending the parade that they fall silent. He may reinvest in the town. Ooh. He's Cole's rich daddy, and no one has seen him in over a year. Sheriff June is sceptical. He answers some questions about the fire investigation and tells the townsfolk off the record that this is a situation where what's legal and what's right are two different things, and that there may soon come a time when the powers of the law don't go far enough to keep Kettle Springs the town we know and love. His ominous rhetoric continues as he vilifies the youth of the town and calls for community action.
That is in
serious bad guy monologuing.
Yeah, that's not good. Well, now it's Founders Day, and Quinn and her dad go to the parade. She spots someone, which turns out to be Tucker, dressed like that stupid creepy clown, on a miniature bicycle. Janet and Ronnie sidle up to Quinn, soon followed by Cole and a very drunk Matt. They're all wearing cardboard friendo masks to hide their identities. What does the clown have to do with Founders Day? What even is Founders Day? Well, the town will have you believe that Friendo was a real person, and during the Depression, he performed for the town's kids. In actual fact, he is an invention by Cole's grandfather, and his family still owns the trademark. During the parade, Janet, Ronnie, Matt, and Tucker plan a surprise. They set off fireworks as the parade king and queen, another Friendo, and Janet's mom, Miss Kettle Springs, go by on their float. Things go wrong, and the floats crash, leaving behind some mild singeing and a bent lamppost. Sheriff Dunn is incensed and blames Cole, but he had nothing to do with it. He's so mad he pushes Janet away, hurting her when she protests Cole's innocence.
Time for an emergency town meeting. Sheriff Dunn takes over proceedings and tells people that if they have attended the Kettle Springs Improvement Society meetings, what he has to say won't come as a surprise. He asks everyone who is willing, able-bodied, and of age to be deputized, to unite as a community and to take action. But anyone who is not willing to be deputised has to leave, including the mayor. At the back door, Rendo is waiting for him. The ice pick misses its intended target of his temple and is instead buried deep into the mayor's neck.
Yeesh! Whoa!
Weapon number one on the Killer Clown Bingo.
Ice pick. Tucker feels guilty about what happened at the parade. His trick just got out of hand. Plus, he was drunk. His mom slid a note under his bedroom door. Confess now and I can help you. Which is totally cryptic. He flips the note over and sees on the reverse, she's added that he's grounded. Less cryptic. Still bad, but less cryptic. He's going out, though, because he cannot miss the party. He just needs a ride, so he texts Matt. As he's waiting for his friends to show up, he takes a look at the security camera feed and sees Frendo at his front door. Slowly, the clown lifts his hand and rings the bell. Ha ha, very funny, not. Tucker goes to confront the prankster, but he's disappeared. He checks around the property and doesn't find him. But when Tucker comes back inside, Frendo is waiting and pulls a huge knife on him. Weapon number two. They scuffle. Frendo cuts his hand and then cuts into his belly. Tucker tries to call 911. But Frendo slits his throat. Murders!
Quinn has caught a ride with Cole and Janet to the party. As they are flying down the Tillerson's cornfields that will never be harvested, government rebates being what they are, they suddenly see a figure in the road. It's Frendo. And he's staring them down. Cole slams on the brakes and bashes into Frendo. Holy shit.
They just ran over somebody.
He just ran someone over. When they get out of the car, they realise they actually hit a Frendo scarecrow. And Matt and Ronnie are whooping over their joke. Lots of FUs and name calling later, they head to the party in the middle of nowhere at an old barn, the Tillerson's old barn, with a rundown silo next to it. A DJ is set up in the barn entrance and inside there's a dance floor and beer pong. Matt and Ronnie, having donned Frendo costumes themselves on arrival, wander off, as does Janet. Cole takes Quinn for a drink in the barn where Rust happens upon them. Turns out he and Cole used to be best friends, but drifted apart with age. As Rust turns to leave, he tells Quinn to be safe. What is it with this town and like cryptic messages?
It's cryptic. All over the place.
I shrug my shoulders and shake my head.
Yeah. Feels a little ominous.
Gee, what gave that away? You know, entire bloody towns on them are ominous. The cornfields alone make it ominous. Yeah.
Dr. Maybrook is at home, filled with fatherly concern over his daughter being at a high school party in a new town. He's glad she went, though. This gives him time to appraise how much work their new house needs. A lot, as it happens. Then, rocks are tossed at the window. Grabbing his golf club, Dr. Maybrook investigates. He can't see anything, but hears the click of a lighter and sees someone in the cornfield surrounding the house with a torch. He can smell gasoline. This isn't a prank. Flames and wind whoosh. Dr. Maybrook runs and something hits him over the head. Before he falls unconscious, a strange voice asks where his daughter is. Dr. Maybrook awakens to the smell of rot. He has been dumped in decomposing corn, along with the town's former doctor, whose corpse is partially responsible for the smell. He tries to cry out when a voice tells him not to, to sit tight and he might make it out alive. Ooh.
Quinn is having a good time dancing with Cole. She breaks away to grab a water. Matt and Ronnie approach Cole, and Quinn watches the crowd. Some of these kids are line dancing.
We are in Missouri after all!
She sees a girl leave the silo, followed by plumes of vape smoke, so we know what they're doing in there. And then she sees Ginger walking from behind the barn with a mohawk. No, she's not walking. She's staggering. And her hair is not styled into a mohawk. It's streaked with blood.
No.
Oh. Quinn runs through all the scenarios in her head about what can happen to a teenage girl at a party when Janet comes over, sees Ginger, and screams. Quinn doesn't consider murderous clowns, because why would you? But there is a friend door with a crossbow. He lifts it, fires, and shoots through Ginger's skull. Fucking go! Janet screams.
Weapon number three. Crossbow. Cole is by the barn, watching as the crossbow clown's shot misses Janet but hits someone else. Cole notes the clown wasn't flustered but working with methodical efficiency. Matt tries to pull Cole to run but is knocked down by someone running by. Before that person can reach the corn, they are shot in the back. Ronnie comes running over then, she's still wearing the clown costume like Matt, with Janet and Quinn behind her. Another bolt flies past, aiming at Janet, but hits a friendly boy who drops into a fire pit. Some kids are trying to close the barn doors. Others, like Cole, are running to the silo. A girl holding the hatch open is shot in the side of the head. Matt, Ronnie, and Cole make it inside. There is no lock on the hatch, so Ronnie pulls the crossbow bolt out of the girl's head, and they use it as a wedge. The clown heads toward the barn, and it gets quiet outside. Where did Janet and Quinn go?
Janet and Quinn are running. Janet thinks she is Killer Frendor's target, and she kind of may have a point with the bolt flying at her. Quinn ducks next to the barn, pulling a tire to hide herself. Janet is running around, and the clown takes aim. Then Quinn rushes out from her hiding place, knocking Janet to the ground as another bolt sails at her, just missing her. Quinn shouts that she needs to get to the cars, but Janet has to lead them through the cornfield. As they leave cover for the field, Janet is hit in the shoulder. Frendor was waiting for them. As they run through the corn, Quinn pretty much dragging Janet, they meet Rust, who says the cars are a mess. But he has a big old bag of guns and bullets in his truck. Quinn uses this break to pull the arrow from Janet's shoulder and she passes out. Then she notices thick, dark clouds rolling in. It's smoke. This really isn't a great first new school party, is it really?
No. Cole, Matt, and Ronnie see the barn is on fire and kids are being picked off one by one as they run out. Cole wants to help, but the other two don't. They fight, and Cole wins. As he pushes at the latch, Frendo and the crossbow fill the gap. Cole manages to avoid being shot in the head. Then Matt pushes the hatch open, and Cole punches Frendo in the face. The hatch slams closed, and they put the wedge back in place. Ronnie pleads for them to just stay there for a while. Please just stay. Fine.
Quinn gets a crash course in gun use and safety from Rust before they head back to the barn, leaving a weak Janet in the field with a pistol. Rust shoots the lock off the back door of the burning barn and frees the 30 or 40 or so kids trapped inside. The front doors were open so Frendor could pick off any who tried to escape. Nice. One kid stops and looks at Quinn and Rust with their guns, but before he can say anything, Frendor shoots him. Quinn takes aim and in two shots kills Frendor. Who would do this? Like, seriously, who would do this? Apparently, their science teacher would. Mr. Vern's dead eyes stare up at her when she removes the mask.
I mean, we knew there was something off about that teacher from the very beginning. So he's a murderer!
That dude was in desperate need of some R&R.
He's a murderer.
In therapy. And a
well,
new career.
He's got plenty of R&R now. Because he's dead.
Because he's dead.
So that's the end, right? The clown's dead?
Yeah, the why end. Not? Yeah, let's just go home and make sure that everything's... Oh no, where's Dr. Maybrook?
No. Oh no. Janet is lying in the cornfield when she hears voices. And what they are saying is concerning. At first, she thought they were cops and that she was safe. Then, she heard them saying stuff about none of the primary targets confirmed. Hill is safe. Vern hates the Murray girl. And the new girl is a bonus objective. Wait a minute. She's the Murray girl. She really is a target. Then, she hears that the barn failed. They're getting closer, so she makes herself as small as possible to hide. They walk past her and are wearing friendo suits. Shit. There's more than one clown. Shit! She needs to do something. Her classmates are heading into the fields where there are more clowns waiting. Standing, Janet screams, "Run! There's more than one clown!"
As Quinn looks down on the Vern clown, Janet bursts from the cornfield screaming that there are more than one clown. Behind her, and closing in fast, is a clown with a circular saw. He hits Janet in the chest. She's swaying, but not dead. Not until this friendo decapitates her. That'll do it. That'll
circular
do it.
Saw!
That'll do it.
New weapon!
Rust shoots him dead. More clowns step out of the cornfields. One with a pitchfork. Another with a crossbow. Another with an axe. They run. Cole shouts for them to get in the silo. Quinn and Rust scream for them to let them in, and eventually the hatch opens. Cole has to punch Matt to let him, but they fall in. Cole has wanted to punch Matt for years, so it's fine. It's good. As they are trying to get the hatch closed, one of the friendos stops them. Rust points his shotgun at the hand and turns it into a bloody stump. A woman screams as they lock the hatch.
Excellent.
I am going to update.
Yes,
our
how many
bingo.
More weapons are you adding now? Circular saw,
circular
pitchfork.
Saw.
Do we add another crossbow, or is that the same crossbow?
It'll be a different crossbow, because one of them was pink.
That's right. So, circular saw, pitchfork, a second crossbow, and an axe. It's excellent. Yes. Suddenly, there's an angry roar outside, and the hatch shudders against the lock. Then, there's a loud crack as an axe head is buried in the door. Quinn sticks the rifle barrel through the crack and shoots. They need to get out, but how? Ronnie demands Quinn's gun and gives some bullshit excuse of being a Miss Kettle Springs Riflery 2019, but no, Quinn's not giving up her rifle. Rust thinks of an escape plan. They will crawl out the back of the silo while the clowns are watching the hatch. Digging through the boxes the farm owners have left behind, they find dynamite sticks. But now the clown with the axe is back and hits the door. Quinn shoots, but misses Friendo. And then there's the familiar sound of a chainsaw! Great!
Yay!
They climb the silo's conveyor belt in an old passage to escape, while Rust stays behind and readies the dynamite. Add a chainsaw.
The tunnel is tight, dark, and slow-going. Ronnie has to dig through soil so they can climb out. When they emerge, they need a plan. Ronnie and Matt want to head to the road. Cole and Quinn want to go to the Tillersons' house. Ronnie has somehow got Quinn's rifle. Quinn demands it back, and Ronnie gets really pissy about it. Then the silo explodes, blasting them to the ground. Cole is upset. Rust has sacrificed himself to kill the clowns. Matt points out he didn't get all of them, though. Walking toward them is a friendo with a machete. They run.
Excellent. So, did you add a chainsaw and a machete?
Yes. Yes, we have chainsaw and we have machete on the list.
Meanwhile, Dr. Maybrook is being told to treat the friendo whose hand was blown off with no medical supplies. He's covered in decomposing corn, former town doctor, and rat feces.
Sterile.
No, definitely not sterile. When he asks the clown's name, she mutters, Friendo. He takes off the mask against the warning of the Friendo on the intercom system. It's Trudy, the waitress from the diner. She tries to spit at him and then starts laughing like a mad clown. The voice on the speaker system tells Dr. Maybrook to be careful because Quinn isn't dead yet. Putting the Hippocratic Oath to one side, Dr. Maybrook pokes into Trudy's wound, making her pass out. Now he can get to work.
Back in the cornfields, Quinn, Cole, Matt and Ronnie have run to the road where they see headlights. Quinn has managed to get the rifle back and sends two wild shots at Machete Friendo. The man in the truck slows to talk. He has a strong southern accent and no Friendo mask. Phew. They tell him they are being hunted, but he is sceptical of what's going on and their pleas. Matt and Ronnie's costumes simply don't help the situation. Quinn manages to get the truck driver to stop when Matt slams the passenger side door and throws insults, which makes him change his mind and speed off.
And you kind of wish that he would run over Matt as he's speeding away.
Oh, God. Come on, Machete Friendo, come on. They start toward the Tillerson farmhouse and quickly encounter the sheriff. Lights of his cruiser flashing. Cole tries to explain, but the sheriff cuts him off. You will call me Sheriff Dunn and treat me with respect. Quinn notices something is off. The sheriff is sweating despite the cold and seems to be looking back over his shoulder. He's not listening to Cole at all, complaining about the switchboard lighting up and mushroom clouds and blaming the Iranians. Dunn snaps, grabs Cole and twists his arm and throws him into the back of his cruiser.
Cole doesn't like Dunn, and the sheriff sure as hell doesn't like Cole, especially after Victoria's death. But as Cole lay in the back of the cruiser, he truly believed Dunn would listen to Quinn and take action. State troopers and the FBI would swarm the cornfield before the sun came up. But when Cole sits up and watches Quinn desperately explain the situation, he notices dark spots blooming on Dunn's shirt. Banging against the window, Cole screams, "One of them!" as Ronnie makes a grab for Quinn's rifle. Dunn grabs Quinn in a headlock and knocks her out with his service revolver. Dunn gives orders to Matt and Ronnie, the latter of which makes a gun finger in Cole's direction, mouthing, "Pow." They pick up Quinn and head to the cornfield. Those fuckers! You were in on it the whole time!
Bastards. Ronnie and Matt are carrying Quinn and she starts to come too, but she hides that. She's conscious and listens in. They've sold out their classmates to be on the right side of history or some such garbage like that. And they also think they will be heroes as their plan is to change Quinn into a Friendo suit, bash her head with a rock, and blame her for the killings. They're not smart. They're not smart. They talk about Janet's stepdad and where he got off to. Right, okay, so that's possibly another friend, or... There are so many people involved in this entire situation, though it's hard to keep count. Quinn is eventually dumped in a pile of her cut-up flatmates. She's still pretending to be unconscious, but Ronnie and Matt think she's coming to and start to look for a head-bashing rock. Quinn uses this time to leap at Ronnie and tackle her for the gun. Then Matt's ear is blown off in the wrestle and he is thrown back into the pile of bodies. Taking advantage of the situation again, Quinn makes a run for it. Ronnie and Matt aren't too concerned. You know, there are other friendos who can catch her.
God, how many more friendos are there? Sheriff Dunn sees Cole's generation as a blighted crop, which needs to be cut and culled. The sheriff has been nudging the town for months into going to this extreme, reshaping their morality, making it seem like their own idea. Did he go to finishing school with Dimity? He's twisting things. He's making people...
He doesn't have style enough.
No, he doesn't. No, not at all.
And he's hardly flirtatious.
Yeah, he's pretty terrible. He says that his generation has empathy, which Cole's generation lacks. He doesn't know if they were born bad, if it's their phones, the internet, or whatnot, but it doesn't matter. Cole argues that no one listens to his generation. They only ever look back and never see the problems of the present or listen to the kids. Dunn explains that originally he was planning to pin everything on Cole, but then Quinn showed up, so now he, Quinn, and Rust will be blamed, and that they went on a love triangle killing spree. Cole points out that this literally makes no sense, but Dunn likes the love triangle trope. He even has Cole's suicide note all ready to go. They reach the Bay Pen factory, but need to wait to see someone. Cole sees a noose dangling from the burned-out walkway that leads to the foreman's office. Cole knows who they're waiting for, and his heart breaks.
Quinn is running through the cornfield trying to reach the Tillerson house. She finds an empty house and, not wanting to fall into a trap, sneaks around and listens carefully, silently moving into the house, looking for the keys to the truck outside. She puts on a coat from a hook and grabs a cleaver from the dish rack. Then she smells something off. In the living room is one of the friend doors. Yikes. Quinn jumps out at it in a surprise attack, but he doesn't move. He must have been one from the silo explosion who somehow got to the farmhouse and sat down to die. The friend's mask has melted to his face. Spying the keys, she makes a grab, but hears the porch groan. Carefully opening the door, Quinn sees Ronnie and they break into a wrestle. Ronnie tries to shoot Quinn. Quinn falls over the burned corpse and slices him open with the cleaver, making a not-so-nice smell of burned blood fill the room. Quinn runs upstairs to escape through a window, thinking Matt will be waiting out back. Ronnie catches her in the bathroom. They fight again with the shower curtain between them. Quinn raises the cleaver and separates the section of Ronnie's skull with her ponytail from the rest of her skull.
Yikes.
Thanks.
Demanding to know where they took Cole, in Ronnie's final moments, she starts to sing the Bay Pen jingle. Little drop of makes everything better. Quinn finishes and then runs out to the truck. It's a manual transmission and not something Quinn can work, but just then, Matt pulls up in his sporty two-seater. He crashes into the farmhouse, gets out, and heads for Quinn, screaming at her. She jerks the gears and the truck slams forward. She shuts Matt up by crushing his head between the bumper of the truck and the side of his own car, which, conveniently enough, is an automatic. She takes his car and heads to the Bay Pen factory.
Back with Dr. Maybrook, he's checking the pulse of Trudy's corpse. He couldn't save her and has been faking it for like an hour or so. But rigor, it will set in soon. The person or the speaker hasn't responded either, even though he's been testing with questions and insults, but nothing. It looks like they've moved on to a different phase in their plan. He can hear machinery in the distance. Taking the friend or suit and mask off Trudy, Dr. Maybrook puts it on, picks up a scalpel, and climbs the steps.
Arthur Hill walks out of the foreman's office. Cole starts to plead with his father, but Arthur Hill refuses to acknowledge their relation. He blames Cole for Victoria's death, saying he took the one thing he cares about after his wife died. Arthur had concocted this plan and really only wanted Cole dead, but quickly others came around to this way of thinking and decided that all the teens needed to die. He blames Cole's generation, saying they're all rotten, and starts to choke Cole. Dunn stops him, and then he and Mr. Murray, who is giddy at the prospect of killing Cole, lift him up and put the noose around his neck. As Dunn is about to push Cole off the catwalk to his hanging death, a shout of "Stop!" comes up. Arthur steps into the light, arms up, rifle stuck in his back, and Quinn holding the gun. Dunn says that he is impressed with the new girl, then pulls and fires his own gun so fast that it barely registers.
The bullet hits Arthur in the shoulder. The second shot hits the concrete next to Quinn's head. She doesn't have a clear shot at Dunn because he's pulled Cole over to use as a human shield. Things move quickly then. Cole bites down on Dunn's wound, and Dunn pushes him away and over the edge of the catwalk. Mr. Murray's ankle is caught in the slack of the rope, and he falls too, doing a complete flip before slamming into the ground, both legs bending backwards and breaking on impact with the floor. Cole is now dangling by his neck. Quinn shoots up at Dunn as he trains his gun on her, incensed. Quinn hits her mark. She shoots the sheriff right in his fat, jolly belly.
Behind the melee are sounds of crashing. Dr. Maybrook is back there, disoriented and desperate to find his daughter. He's not coping well with the events of the night, to say the least. The crash is actually a speeding pickup truck crashing through the factory loading bay doors and heading for Cole, who is swinging like a piñata. The truck stops before hitting him and takes Cole's weight. It's Rust!
Yay!
Telling Quinn to keep her rifle on Dunn, Rust gets Cole down. Mr. Murray, though in bad shape, is trying to finish Cole off and use his body weight to drag him down and break his neck. Dunn is not looking well, and the stomach wound will end him. In a last attempt to kill Quinn, he raises his wavering hands and aims, but Quinn shoots him in the head, knocking his hat off, and then he falls down the stairs. Quinn heads over to Cole, where Rust is giving him CPR. Don't be dead. Don't be dead. No, wait a minute. That's not CPR. Rust and Cole are kissing. And they look good together. Some joy, finally!
It's only taken an entire night of murder. Rust explains his escape from the silo. He made a mad dash out the front before the explosion and somehow seemed to keep missing everyone. Then another friend or stumbles toward them. Wounded, but not harmless. We've seen these friendos. They are not harmless. And he's holding a tiny knife. Quinn raises the rifle and pulls the trigger, but the chamber is empty. And a familiar voice in says her name. Quinn realises this friendo is her dad and runs to him. He asks for a doctor. Bless. Oh, bless.
In the Main Street eatery 2 months later, Cole pretends to start a live stream. And it is not funny. Rust covers his hand and Quinn apologises to the waitress. A lot has changed in these 2 months. 20% of the Kettle Springs population was either dead, in prison, or have moved away. Cole and Rust are happy together. Dr. Maybrook is going to hang his stethoscope up as soon as a replacement doctor can be found so he can take office as the new mayor. They are all in therapy.
Good job.
References to Frendo across town are being painted and washed away. The town saw an influx of media, law enforcement, and tourists who all needed a place to stay and eat. Kettle Springs has been saved, but not in the way Arthur Hill, Dunn, or their other 13 conspirators intended. Arthur Hill has been declared dead based on the amount of blood in the factory, but his body wasn't there. Likely, the cornfield has swallowed him up.
Meanwhile, a lone passenger on a private jet to Cuba opens and closes his fist around a small ball. He's been repeating the motion for hours. Laid on the seat opposite him is a suit bag. Arthur Hill's new mantra is, if you wanted a job done right, you had to do it yourself. He repeats over and over. He's learned from his mistakes. Money doesn't buy everything. don't delegate revenge, and failure is temporary. Are you sure the pilot recognised him from the previous flights, or possibly the news, but it doesn't matter. Taking his suit bag with him to the bathroom, Frendo now waits for the plane to land, knife in hand.
Sequel? Sequel? Am I hearing a sequel?
Sequel? One Man Rampage?
I think we should take a moment. Please remember that Fictional Hangover is a free podcast and always will be. If you'd like to support the show, stop listening to us for just a few minutes, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover, then come back. If you can't do this monthly but still want to support us because you just like the show so much, head over to Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover to drop us a one-time tip. Your support on Patreon and Ko-fi will help us bring you more spoiler-filled discussions, book character cosplays, and ridiculous content you know and love. Now, back to the episode.
We have, in our Killer Clown Bingo, an ice pick, a huge knife, a crossbow, a circular saw, a pitchfork, a second crossbow, an axe, a chainsaw, a machete, and a knife. Do you know what you feel like you've missed some?
Yeah, I feel like something's missing.
There was a lot of weapons. Fire?
Do we count the cleaver, or is this only clown weapons?
Only clown weapons. Mm. But Ronnie did have a rifle.
Ronnie did have a rifle, and she was in on it. She didn't kill anyone, though.
And she was dressed as Frendo. No, she tried. She tried!
She tried and failed.
But didn't succeed. Crazy, crazy, crazy.
Also, Matt tried to run Quinn over. So do we count a 42-seater?
Should we count car? 42-seater instead of just car because
it's better that way.
Yeah, totally agree.
And what about a noose? Does the noose count?
Mr. Murray was dressed as Frendo.
And also, Quinn's dad had a scalpel. And while he wasn't in on it, he was wearing the Frendo suit.
Well, why not?
Just add it in.
Fist. Punch. I'm surprised none of them actually had a gun. But they were trying to keep all the ballistics down, weren't they?
They were. That's why they used all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Reasonable, really. They tried.
I mean, it's they tried, and they failed. Well, did they? There's a lot of people got killed.
Yeah, a lot of people died. But not really the ones that they were intending to die.
Not their primary targets or bonus objective.
Although Mr. Vern really did want Janet dead, and whilst he died before she did, she was still decapitated by a circular saw, so his wish came true. It's great. Yikes, that book.
I don't know what I was expecting from it.
You weren't expecting 15 murderous clowns, though. I can guarantee that.
No, I wasn't expecting 15 murderous clowns. I think I was more expecting, like, a Stephen King-style novel. And we know I am not a Stephen King fan. I can't get away with his writing. I've tried and I keep trying, but it's just, it doesn't gel with me. Which is fine.
I am a Stephen King fan, even though
yes,
he's exceptionally wordy. I still enjoy him.
Yes, and that's fine. He has a large enough readership where my not being able to get with him is not making a blind bit of difference to his bank balance.
You
so
know,
it's fine.
You still can enjoy his work, though, in watching a delightful movie. Such as It.
True, very true. I was going to watch it at the weekend because it was on Netflix or Amazon. And then when we went to go watch it, it wasn't there. So I ended up watching a really, 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 really naff horror movie. Horror, in the loosest
Yeah.
term, movie. With Duggaria Scott. And zombies.
Good.
No, it
Yeah.
wasn't. Don't watch. Anywho, I was expecting a Stephen King style novel. And I thought, okay, not my favourite. Don't really gel with him as an author. It's a different person though, so I'm willing to give it a go. And it's a debut novel. Fine, happy. And when I was reading it, and it was like 90s teen slasher movie, I was like, yes, I am all for this. I am loving this. So it was completely different to what I was expecting. I think even the cover, it advertises something that it's not. It is, but it's not.
Did you think that cornfield was haunted?
I thought there was a potential for it to go in that way. I didn't even read the summary for this book, really. I didn't really look into it because, like I said at the beginning, Jesse Valinsky's narration is what sold me. And then I stayed for the 90s horror teen
Yeah.
slasher movie. But it was really good, and you could visualize it as a movie. You can
Oh
see
yeah.
it,
It'll make a great
and you
movie.
wouldn't, and you won't lose a lot, I don't think.
No. No, there's so much action and it was all very well described. So I think it'll make an
Yeah.
excellent movie.
It's just random Fred Orr's coming out. And you know, even though you're reading it and you think, oh, there's just one killer Fred Orr. Sorry, Fred, I keep saying Freddo because I keep thinking of the British chocolate Freddy the Frog. That's called Freddo. Crazy. I'm obviously needing some chocolate. You know when they're at the party and the Freddo comes in and crossbow bolts everybody, and then you kind of think, is this the only one? This has got to be the only one. But actually, it's been set up already that when the sheriffs wanted to deputize so many people, you think, actually,
Yeah, you think
I don't
like
think there's just
he
one.
knows something bad is going to happen. So we got to deputize all these people. Either that, or we know that he's slightly unhinged anyway and hates all teenagers. So maybe he was trying to deputize everyone so they could just all go out and arrest teenagers. That's kind of what I thought was gonna happen with that.
I kind of thought he was deputizing everybody, so then one or two people could be the ones who committed the crime or who committed the murders, but they would get away with it based on something like self-defense in the line of duty, because that's common in the world. People aren't prosecuted when they should be.
Yes.
And let's face it, this book is full of current political issue
Hey,
commentaries
make Kettle Springs
about what.
great again.
Yeah, and there was a huge bit from Janet saying how inclusive Kettle Springs' population is, like her generation is. She came from Cincinnati as an Asian American and not expecting to be accepted into a little town in Missouri, and she was, in actual fact. The whole gambit, a whole spectrum of sexualities and genders and religions, and it was an inclusive, her class at high school was massively inclusive, and she was just part of the masses, and she was instantly a member of Kettle Springs community of that generation. So you kind of think, well, yeah, they have inclusivity and tolerance, and you know, people are different, but they accept differences because people should be different. Whereas the narrow-mindedness of Dunn and the society, it just reeked, absolutely reeked. So, you know, the beginning when you give Adam Caesar's little interview, and he made it quite academic. I can sort of see it because he is making it is a commentary on modern society. It is very much there. But it's hidden. It's not hidden.
It's hidden behind a clown mask is what it is.
It's hidden behind a clown mask, but it's also side by side with the slasher movie. So it's kind of like, it's both. And you can take from it what you want. So if you're not wanting to go in for the political commentary, you can just enjoy it for the slasher movie that it is. But if you want a little bit more, then you can take that out of it.
Depending on which side you're on, you can still enjoy this book.
Oh, well, yeah. Edit this out, you. I don't think a lot of our listenership will be red baseball cap wearers.
No, I don't think so either.
I'd be surprised.
I don't think so either.
I would be surprised.
They probably would have dropped off by now.
Back in the room.
Back in the room.
Back in the room. So, favourite bits, standout moments.
The first shot with the crossbow was really intense. And then after that, it was crazy clown field mayhem from then on. Woohoo!
And who doesn't love crazy clown field mayhem?
If you don't love crazy clown field mayhem, you're wrong.
This is the wrong circus for you.
Yeah, you're on the wrong side of history. Yikes.
Oh my God, Matt and Ronnie were so friggin' annoying.
Yeah, they were terrible. And like, why? Why would they turn on their friends?
Because the scared chicken shits. They want to be the reigning couple in Kettle Springs. They think it's Janet and Cole. And remember the whole hair commercial of Cole? He walks down and everybody freezes and goes in slow-mo. He is the king of Kettle Springs.
Yeah, because he's rich. His dad owns the town.
He's rich. Yes, but he also has a charisma about him. And it's like the way Janet desperately wants to be with him. Ronnie desperately wants to be with him.
He's gay. He's gay. And that was adorable.
That was amazing. That was a standout moment for me when it was the CPR kissing scene.
I was really enjoying the fact throughout the entire thing that Cole wasn't in a relationship with anyone. And Quinn wasn't like, oh, I'm in love with this boy. Like, I was really enjoying it for the fact that there was no relationship stuff. I mean, I don't count Ronnie and Matt because they weren't, you know, the main characters in the story.
They were in a relationship of convenience. Right. She wanted to be with Cole and Matt just wants to be the big boy on campus.
But I was really enjoying it that, like, there were no love triangles involved. There was no relationship like that. Even though Dunn was trying to force it in his schemes.
He loves his triangles.
But I loved it.
It's like Romeo and Juliet. That the fictional characters did.
But I was loving it. I was loving it so much. And I was really pleased that we made it all the way through the book. And there was no like, oh, but now I've got to have a boyfriend. But then the boys kissed and I was very excited about it.
Yes! I loved that.
It was so cute and sweet.
I loved it. There was nothing chintzy or uncomfortable or forced about it. It was perfect. And then when you think about the conversation that Rust and Cole had back in the barn, there might have been some signals there. There might have been not necessarily, it wasn't overt, but you know, there was a little blush. Yeah. And even then it was just like, this is it. I thought sometimes the way that Quinn talked about Janet, she was kind of like fascinated with Janet. Like, she didn't like her, but she was fascinated by her. And I wouldn't say down to in a romantic way, but there was something like she was drawn to Janet, but she didn't like her.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting.
There was also that scene when she first meets Ginger at the beginning, and Ginger looks different from everyone else. And so she's immediately intrigued by Ginger. So I feel like what Quinn is experiencing is that, you know, she moved from Philadelphia to this small backwoods-ass town in Missouri, and she thinks, well, everyone's going to be line dancing and wearing cowboy hats with hay hanging out their mouth, and then no, they're actually normal crazy teenagers like she is.
Yeah.
So of course she's going to be intrigued by all these people who are completely different than what she was expecting.
Yeah, exactly. It was refreshing not to have that forced. And even when Quinn's hanging around with Cole so much, Cole is very much being a friend. Mm-hmm. And Quinn's very much, I'm happy with this. I have somebody who's making me comfortable and making sure I'm safe. That's nice. And Rust and the, you know, the walk to school, again, it was a friend. And that's refreshing because, did you know Punchy the Clown, boys and girls can be friends?
What? No, what?
I know.
No, what?
Truth, I would not lie to you about this. Oh my God.
I do like that. I do like that. Most of my friends in high school were boys, so I understand.
Exactly. I had a heavy mix, probably more boys than girlfriends, to be fair. It doesn't matter. You know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter.
I will say that I did appreciate the fact that Missouri wasn't written as... The high school in Missouri wasn't written as podunk as everyone always stereotypes small southern towns like that, because, I mean, that's kind of where I grew up. I mean, not Missouri, but Arkansas is very close, and not everyone's like that. There was line dancing involved. There was. In the barn, while they're all drinking. But still, it was nice that not everyone was a giant redneck.
Yeah, I think the closest you got was Rust. But I wouldn't even have said he was a redneck. He was just...
He's a hunter.
He knew what he... He was just a hunter. He knew who he was and what he was and what he enjoyed. Yeah. There wasn't any stereotyping. The closest it came to, you know, tiny town, oh my God, is that there was more than one year group in the classroom.
Yeah, that was a little... She was shocked by that.
Yeah. But if it's only a small town, only a small population, it's understandable. The school board can't afford multiple teachers of random science.
And the fact that it's just science. It's not any specific science. It's general science.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, we only ever had our split up to chemistry, biology and physics, and that was it. But at least you knew it was chemistry, biology, or physics. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, dear me.
Do you know, while we were, just briefly before we got off on that school tangent, we were both kind of glowing about Rust. Rust was definitely my favorite character.
Same. Absolute badass, semi-redneck. And a wonderful surprise love interest. I adored Rust.
Yeah, he was definitely the best. I loved him from the very beginning, where he meets Dr. Maybrook, and
Dr. Maybrook in the cool shoes.
Yes, Dr. Maybrook and his cool shoes.
Everybody loves his white shoes. Because we don't mention in the summary, but Dr. Maybrook has been an emergency room doctor for many, many years. So he has not been able to, for obviously bloody reasons, not been able to wear white shoes. So the first thing he did en route to Missouri was to buy white shoes.
That's really cute.
It is, and everybody's like, cool. Cole's about to pass out at the end. And Maybrook is dressed as Frendo, and he's just like, cool shoes, passes out.
Can I talk to you about that scene for a second?
Go for it. I'm here to be talking about it.
What would have happened if Quinn was not out of bullets and she killed her dad?
I was expecting
that. Me too. And I'm so glad that it didn't happen, but I really thought that it was going to. But yikes, that would have been terrible. terrible. Could you imagine? Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah, I was fully expecting Meerbrook to be shot by Quinn. Really was.
And she tried. She tried.
She pretty quickly becomes a hunter, doesn't she? She's a predator by the end. Absolute badass. Yeah,
she's pretty great. She's good at shooting her gun. She took some nice quick lessons from Rust. Took them straight to heart.
That tells you how good a teacher Rust must be.
Yeah. Because they weren't out there in the cornfield.
Trigger discipline.
About guns
Boom.
For too terribly long before everything got worse.
In a panicky situation as well.
Yeah, she kept her head on.
I liked it when she was wrestling with, was it Ronnie? And she screams that out, gun discipline. And then shoots. And then Matt gets shot in the ear.
Yes. She's learned. She learned her lesson. She knows what she's doing. And clearly, Ronnie had no idea. I do not believe her. I'm Miss Kettle Springs Rivalry 2019. I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
No. I like Rust's smirk. Which is, she looked at Rust and Rust's
No. I was so worried when Rust exploded the silo. So sad. Yeah. And then Cole, thinking about it in retrospect, Cole was like, oh no, he sacrificed himself. Like, they used to be friends, and that's sad. But then at the end, they're making out, and you're like, oh no, he would have been so heartbroken.
You know, sometimes I'm like, oh no, they survived. Really? How did they survive? And I'm like annoyed by that, but I'm not annoyed that Rust survived at all. I really liked it. I really rated
it. He deserved to survive.
I'm surprised Arthur Hill got away.
Yeah. But you gotta set up for that sequel, man.
True. I mean, he's legally dead, so, you know, whatever. He can get away with murder. Literal, horrible murder. And how much of a douche is Arthur Hill? Like, his wife dies, okay. Turns into a bit of a dirtbag. The daughter dies, but it's literally an accident. She falls. She falls into the reservoir. It was a freak accident. Blames the son, who really had nothing to do with the falling over. He's a horrible person.
It's even worse when they are waiting to talk to him. You know, when he's about to be hanged. And he, like, completely ignores the fact that Cole is his son. Like, you took away the only thing that mattered to me. He tells his son about his daughter. You took away the only thing that mattered to me. Like, oh, wah, wah. I don't count at all. That was garbage.
Uh-huh.
That was straight up garbage.
A parent is not supposed to have a favourite child. I mean, obviously they do. But, you know, they're not supposed to. You're not supposed to tell the kids, I wish you were the one who died. That's just awful. No parent of the year awards for Arthur Hill.
No
teacher of the year awards for Mr. Vern. That outbreak, by the way, outburst in science, was a thing of beauty.
It was really great.
Can we talk about in school suspension? What the beeswax is that?
Well, sometimes you can't be sent home for suspension. So you're separated from the rest of your class in a room by yourself or with the other kids that are in school suspension. Just like detention, but all day. All day for multiple days.
We don't have that.
I never got in trouble like that in high school. I was a good girl.
Yeah, we don't have... We have detention. You might have detention after school or detention during your lunch, but...
Is it time? Are we at that moment? Is it time?
Can I ask, do you have any... We obviously edit this out if you want to. Do you have any fan castings?
No.
Mm-mm. No.
Did you?
Cool. The only person I could really picture... Do you know it? New Mutants?
Mm-hmm.
The movie. There's the one, the redneck one. who killed his dad in the mines, mm-hmm. I could picture him as Rust.
Man, that guy's accent was terrible in that movie. Jacob and I went to watch it. That's the movie that we saw at the drive-in. And then, like, the whole way home, we were like, hey, you know, I was down there in the mines.
I killed my pa. In the mines, I killed the pa. My pa. Mines, pa.
I killed my daddy and all them other.
I killed my daddy dead.
Yeah, that was terrible. I love that guy, though. Yeah. He's in Stranger Things, and he's fantastic. But I don't want to get down there in them mines and have them get them explosions and kill him daddy. That's real bad.
Would you like some dynamite with that accent? Yeah, so basically I could picture him, but feel free to cut that out if you want.
But then I have to cut out that accent.
If you want to keep that action, you down the mines with my pa and my da, and I killed them all, my brother and all my family.
I killed them all, and now I'm in this school.
I want to do it again, true.
And my name's Ken Ball, and I'm going to kill everybody when I explode. I think it is time, Claire. Do them. We'll do that.
Oh my god, let's get this clown car moved on.
Please do.
So, once again, I'm just going to plug the Would You Rather Facebook group for answering our questions there. We can't poll on our Facebook page. We've had to set up a separate group. We will not spam you on that page with anything other than Would You Rather questions. We have put the latest ones on there, and we will put on some archive ones for fun, just for fun. So please join the group so you can vote.
Please do.
We would appreciate it.
Please do.
Yes. And this week on the Would You Rather Facebook group, we asked, would you rather be chased by a murderous clown with a crossbow or a chainsaw?
Hey!
We had to select just two from all the lovely, delightful weaponry options.
Those were two good choices, though. I mean,
they were excellent choices.
The crossbow was the very first one, so you gotta use that
classic
one. And then classic. The chainsaw is just an excellent weapon, so.
But it was either that or the circular saw, really.
Yeah.
And the much of a muchness, I suppose. So, on Facebook. Crossbow received 60% of the votes, chainsaw 40%. On Instagram, crossbow received 42% of the votes, chainsaw 58%, very close. And on Twitter, it was 38% crossbow and 62% chainsaw. And to be honest, the comments this week are
They're really
glorious.
Great. They're really great.
Absolutely glorious. Thank you if you commented. Please keep doing it. We love and adore reading
We
them.
Do.
So, on Twitter, Lord Sock said, chainsaws, if I keep running, then eventually run out of fuel and I can safely punch the clown in the spleen. Could you be that accurate with the spleen?
I think if anyone could, it would be Lord Sock.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if Lord Sock has, like, detailed anatomical drawings in a binder.
Yeah.
Or a murder war.
Probably both.
And I am not judging.
No.
I'm celebrating.
Yes, we are celebrating this fact. Because we love everything about Lord Sock.
Yeah.
Miriam on Facebook said, my answer depends on how adept the clown is at using those weapons. I mean, the crossbow guy, pretty adept.
You've got to be adept.
Yeah.
You can't just randomly pick up a crossbow.
No.
And wield
the
it.
First, Mr. Vern, the first crossbow. The second one,
yeah.
You know, hard to say, the pink crossbow. But I wouldn't have imagined Mr. Vern being so buff and being able to work a crossbow that well. He just seemed kind of wienery to me.
Oh, completely. Completely. I think he's like 5 foot nothing as well.
Yeah. Balding. Wearing like a yellow short sleeve button up shirt.
With sweat stains.
It's buttoned crookedly.
Yeah. It's never seen a night.
Yeah.
corduroys,
brown, missing a belt loop,
and dark green corduroys. Or he's lost a lot of weight, actually, and he's punched the additional holes in to tighten it a bit.
That too.
Yeah, so they're not quite fitting correctly.
Got like a stringy comb over.
Oh gosh, yes. Yeah. Oh yes.
Yeah. But he's a badass with a crossbow until he gets shot and killed.
Do you know my theory with Mr. Verne is he's a very frustrated man, and I wouldn't be surprised if he has like cardboard cutouts, or you know, he'll draw really bad stick people, and he'll just on a weekend, that's all he does is shoot his crossbow pretending that he's hitting Cole and Janet and Tucker in there.
He's definitely going.
Yes, so that's how he's got
definitely
good.
Going to firing ranges on the weekend.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, not anymore.
So Colin, he's very dead. No, and he's just renewed his membership, so sucks to me. Colin on Facebook says, "Clown with a chainsaw, please. All it'll take is one well-placed tickle and he'll be dropping that bad boy on his own head. How'd you like them apples? Chuckles."
You gotta get pretty close to tickle someone.
Colin on Facebook has very long arms. Not like Mr. Tickle from the Mr. Men length, but, you know. You could do from behind.
You could.
Or is the raising the chainsaw up in the air well placed? Yeah, just get the rib area.
Yeah. That could be dangerous though, because you know, you could drop the chainsaw on your own head, or also on the tickler's head.
At that point, at that time in point in time, the chainsaw is going to probably land on you. It's a last ditch attempt. You know, you'll do what you have to. You do what you can.
Okay. Coral on Facebook said, "I hate the sound of a chainsaw, so I'll have to go with the crossbow and hope he's a bad shot." Can I just tell you, I agree 100%. I hate that just loud sound. I'm so over all of the loud sounds happening around me all the time. And I have issues with sounds anyway. So, Coral, I agree with you. Hate that sound. Hate it. So yeah, we're on the same page.
Okay, that was passionate. Thank you. Jennifer on Facebook said, "After my handshake with a chainsaw, I think it's time to add a new weapon to my collection of mishaps."
Oh, Jennifer.
Jennifer was on our Gish team.
Oh, bless her heart.
And nearly sacrificed a limb. And a task.
Oh.
And that aerial view of what she did.
That was great.
That was beautiful.
Was so great that even though she cut her pinky with a chainsaw, she kept working on her task. That is dedication.
Jennifer's a badass. Have you seen some of the pictures she posted as well?
She's a badass.
Like the dungaree picture. Where she's doing the strong arm. My goodness.
Yeah.
I'm not messing with Jennifer. I think she would beat the
crap out
of
me. She's also learning how to become like an MMA fighter. So just stay exactly. out of her way.
Exactly. Nothing but nice things about Jennifer, because she could take you down with a glare. Never mind, you know.
But she's so wonderful.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh, Gish.
Stephink Creations on Instagram said, "I'm going to say chainsaw because you only have to stay just out of arm's reach. The arrow can happen no matter the distance, really depending on how skilled the archer is with a bow." That's... Yeah. This is a tough decision.
It is. Crinolin Refloig at Instagram says, "Chainsaw. Unlike the movies, they never start on the first pull." She makes a very good point.
She does. Danae Tesh on Instagram said, "Crossbow. At least it won't cut through any means of escape, and you can zigzag and pray that the clown has terrible aim. Also, really? Just would not want to be sawed to death." Agree.
And agree. And California B on Instagram says, You guys, what? No insane clowns. But I guess a crossbow? I'm really not fast. But I feel like you could at least lock that clown in somewhere and it couldn't cut its way out.
It's true.
I love the fact we are traumatizing California B on
Me
Instagram
too.
with our Would You Rathers.
Me too.
But I would like to point out she is also encouraging us.
She is.
So, after all those wonderful comments, has any of them persuaded you?
Oh, no. I mean, I've already shouted about mine. Remember, I don't like the chainsaw sound, so I'm going with the crossbow. Really? I was really seriously agreeing with Coral. What about you?
I'm still stuck, if I'm honest, because a crossbow needs a bit more skill to wield. But you can't hear them coming. If somebody's got a chainsaw, they can't turn it on and off. So at least you can tell where mm-hmm. they are to try mm-hmm. and hide. And I would hope the chainsaw wielder was a lefty. And I say that not out of prejudice for lefties. My own son is a lefty. But because I have a friend who used to be a manager at a tool hire place, and he never liked to rent the chainsaws to left-handed people because they aren't made for left-handed people. You're more likely to lose a limb yourself turning the chainsaw on if you are left-handed.
Yeah, because the pull strings
on
that
they're just
side.
Not, they're on the wrong side. So I'm like, ooh, if it's a chainsaw, at least
they can maybe cut their own arm off.
Yeah.
Especially if you tickle them.
And Lord Sock has a point. You know, eventually it will run out of fuel.
Yeah.
And a chainsaw is heavier to wield. They're not going to be able to run with that thing. So I'm going to say chainsaw purely because I can hear them. It's harder for them to run with it. I mean, imagine you're wielding a chainsaw and you're running and you trip over something. At this point as well in the party, there's a shit ton of dead bodies everywhere. There's pools of blood. There's drinks strewn around the place and debris from explosions. Yeah. It's not safe ground to be running around with a chainsaw in the dark. So I'm going to go with a chainsaw just because I think there's more possibilities of escape.
Okay. Next question.
Yeah. Far too much thought into that one.
Would you rather everyone in town hate you because you're a YouTube bro, or because you're popular in school? This is not a terrible question. Except for the fact that everyone hates you. The entire town. And then they become clowns and then they try to murder you.
I'm going to say popular in school. Because if I'm popular in school, I might actually also be academically inclined. And then I can get a scholarship and then go to a college out of state and then never return to the town ever again.
Okay.
And I don't really want to be a YouTube bra or YouTube influencer. Mm-hmm. I think it's a short-term life
goal. That's your...
Obviously, there are people who are making a lot of money out of it, but...
That's your 15
minutes.
I don't want
to do stunts and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, and I really don't want to be doing those kind of stunts. I'm not made for that kind of exertion.
No. I feel like I am agreeing with you. I would rather be the popular person in school. Just because I can't stand the YouTube bros. Like, hey... I'm on YouTube. I'm going to go jump in this reservoir.
I was watching Into the Storm the other week, and have you seen that one with Richard Armitage?
No.
I don't know if it's something that you would watch because it's probably a little too close to home for you. And there's two like total backwater redneck characters who are constantly making like the Jackass style videos. And they're just like, we're gonna get that 1 million hits on YouTube. We're gonna be famous. We're gonna be YouTube famous. And it's like, is YouTube famous?
Mm.
It's like, you know, we call it like Strictly Come Dancing over here, but I think it's Dancing with the Stars in America. That kind of like quote-unquote celebrity program, and it says these are the celebrities that are going to be on this program, or like Celebrity Big Brother or something like that. And I kind of go, highly big air quotes celebrity. And it's like, who's this person? I'm looking it up. Oh, they're a YouTube influencer. Oh, who's this person? I don't know who you are, because you're like YouTube. And is that really celebrity? Is being a gossip columnist a celebrity? I don't know. I think I'm showing my age. But I'm not going to go out and murder you for it. You do you. That's fine.
Yeah.
I just don't recognise you as
a celebrity. Yeah, I just don't care about you even a little bit, even at all.
Not even a little bit. Not even at all. That's all.
10 things I hate about you. I don't hate you. Not even a little bit. Not even at all.
I'm sad now. I was genuinely sad when Heath Ledger died. And every time I remember he's dead, I get sad.
I'm sorry.
I'm a sad clown now. Next question. Would you rather drunkenly cliff dive to your untimely demise at a reservoir or be in a silo explosion?
This is not a good question.
It's not. Do you want to blow up or drown effectively?
I mean, she...
With a head... Probably a head
wound. She probably died before she hit the water. Let's be...
She was still alive in the ambulance. Cole says he was holding her hand and she was still muttering in the ambulance. I'm saying silo explosion. Over. Done. Snap.
Yeah, I'm also going to say silo explosion just because I don't want to be high up in the reservoir and fall in. I'm terrified of heights. No. So... I'm gonna explode. Little rush gun explode. Maybe we get dynamite in the shadow. I'm gonna get exploded. There's exploding. Boom. Big old dynamite.
I understood every word of that.
Next question. Would you rather slice Ronnie up with a cleaver or smash Matt's head in with his own car?
I love this question because there's no answer.
No. They both deserve terrible things.
Can I not do one then the other? Can I not do a queen and do one and the other?
You have to pick one. This is would you rather. You can't do both.
Ronnie's stupid ponytail that she kept moving around.
Oh my god, catch a fucking ponytail.
Stupid
up.
Side ponytail. Or smash Matt's head in with into his own car. Which he's probably calling his baby and has a, like, you know, an unhealthy romantic relationship with her. Probably Ronnie. Because Matt was pissing me off, something rotten. But there's something deeply satisfying about killing Ronnie.
With a cleaver.
Because she was such a screechy little pain in the ass by the end. So full of her own self-importance.
Oh, yeah. Especially, when Cole gets put in the back of the police car and she, like, throws a finger guns at him. Like, man, fuck that girl. Cut her with a cleaver. Get it over with.
Making a friend or costume. Oh, sexy.
Ugh, yeah. Ugh. Yeah, I'm gonna cut that bitch.
She's Icky the Clown. She's Icky the Clown.
Yeah, I'm gonna cut that bitch. I feel like Matt's really... probably more of a follower.
Oh, completely. He wants to be cool. He wants to be leader of the social crowd, but he's an absolute wiener dog.
Yeah. So I'm gonna cut Ronnie up with the cleaver. Yeah. Yeah.
Bye, bitch.
Yeah. All right. What's our last question?
Would you rather be a killer clown or killed by a killer clown?
I don't want to be killed. So I'm obviously going to have to be a killer clown. And we were just talking about cutting Ronnie up with the cleaver. So...
Is that your weapon of choice?
I mean, probably not. There's a lot of weapons to choose from.
We do. We have a lot of weapons. What would you choose?
I don't think I'm strong enough for a crossbow. But I think that would be pretty good. And I don't like the...
If you get like a self-reloading crossbow, yeah, that would be good.
I don't like the sound of the chainsaw or the circular saw.
The saw. It was a nice pick. It was an axe. Knife. Huge knife. Little scalpel.
I think I'd probably go with an axe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I'm going to do the axe. What about you?
Oh, kill a clown, baby.
Of course. I mean, just look at us. Friends. We're obviously into being the clowns.
Yeah, kill a clown. Yeah. Why the hell not? I mean, I've already said I want to clean my
right,
money.
So. Right.
And smash Matt's head.
Like, you don't want to be killed by a clown. That's embarrassing.
No. It is. Imagine that on your death certificate.
Yeah.
Clown
murdered by a clown.
Womp womp. It would literally have to have the womp womp on the end.
It really would. So what's your weapon then? And what are you going to pick?
Oh my.
Tickling chainsaw.
Not doing the tickling chainsaw. Oh, there was machete as
well.
Oh,
I forgot about the machete. Machete's good.
I might go with the machete. And then it would be like in the movie Machete when he's like, this is Mama's looking machete. And I'd be like, this is Bobo's looking machete.
Or you could be like Jason.
True. Yeah.
He's pretty good with a machete.
He was pretty good with him, and he has good success rate.
Yeah. He keeps coming back and then he goes to space.
Oh my god, that was so bad.
That one I actually enjoyed.
It was bad, Jason X. But it was enjoyable. It was so bad it was good. I have a very low standard for movies though. Like I watch shitty movies
Me
on
too.
Purpose.
Me too. Bad horror movies are my favorite things of all time.
Oh, the cheaper they are, the better. Like, if you go to the supermarket or the store and they're like the £3.
Oh, yeah. They're in that bin just full of still... other shitty movies. Yeah.
Yes. And you've got to dive in. You've got to get the rest. You've got to get a few and just have a shitty horror movie night. They are the best. Yeah. I don't want any budget involved. No.
Can I tell you what are my favorite shitty horror movies?
Yes.
Years and years and years ago, on Showtime, there was a series called Masters of Horror. And it was famous directors making terrible movies. And I have a collection of them in a mausoleum. That's how my collection came, in a mausoleum. And they're so good. They're so good, but also really, really bad at the same time.
I'm sure I've seen some of them.
All right. Uh-oh. That's the end of Would You Rather. And now it's time for a favorite final thought quote. I have a confession to make. I only have one favorite final thought quote this time, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the storyline, but it was the best part of the book.
This book is not made for thoughtful quotations and stuff. It's not that kind of book, so any quote that you enjoyed is fine. What have you got?
That wasn't CPR. That wasn't CPR at all. It's my favorite part.
Yes. Yes. 100% yes.
No, it's not CPR.
100% yes.
What about you? Do you have...
I've got two. I pulled two.
Okay, so you have a one for fun. That's all I had.
I have a one. Yeah, I have a one for fun just because when I was listening to it, it really stood out to me. This one is when I was reading it and it stood out to me as a bit more of the more serious of a quote. The quote is, Quinn took comfort in that, the fact that history bent toward progress, no matter how hard the assholes tried pushing back.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And my one fun is, she didn't want to become a target for the clown.
You know what that reminds me of? Another lovely book narrated by Jesse Valinsky. Do you remember in The Survivor when she's like, I'm not getting killed by a tree today or something like that?
Yes. I'm not getting killed by a tree. I'm not getting killed by the death bubbles either. She just denies all the funny things. Like, come on, it's death by tree. It's hilarious. I can't say that right now, actually, because I'm listening to And the Tree's Crept In.
Oh, I love that one.
And it's so well narrated and so well written. And I'm like, literally last night I listened to a third of the book with my eyes open, staring at the scene and going, ooh, this is creepy.
Yeah.
Trees are creepy.
Yeah.
And murderous, depending on which planet you're on.
Man, I love And the Trees Crept In. I love it so much. I love everything by Dawn Kurtigage, but everyone knows this by now.
I'm 60% of the way through now.
So good. So, so good.
Don't know what Dawn Kurtigage has against houses in the middle of nowhere.
It's a good place to die.
It's not. That's why it's the perfect place for a horror book.
Yeah.
Anywho, we're talking about clowns and cornfields.
Yes.
Cornfields.
But now, I mean, that's all over with. We're done talking about Clown in a Cornfield. But we do need to suggest some things. If you liked this, try this. What do you have to suggest?
I will admit to struggling with this one. I was trying to think of something that fell in with like the 90s slasher movie kind of novella. And I've read a lot of horror books lately, but none of them have necessarily fallen into that. The closest, probably the Slasher Girls and Monster Boys anthology.
Yeah, I thought about that.
More because it's an ode to those type of movies. And
we should have saved it.
But we've already suggested.
We should have saved that one.
We should have. We should have suggested. We might even cover it next year in October.
It's really good. And we've only done one short story collection before, which was not good.
Yeah, so I would very happily quite cover these ones. But anywho, so I did a search. I have not read this book. And it's actually a novella. And it's The Night of the Mannequins by Stephen Graham Jones. But all of the indications were that it has the same kind of feel to Clown in a Cornfield. So the synopsis is from blackwells.co.uk and as follows. One last laugh for the summer as it winds down. One last prank just to scare a friend. Bringing a mannequin into a theatre is just some harmless fun, right? Until it wakes up. Until it starts killing. Luckily, Sawyer has a plan. He'll be a hero. He'll save everyone to the best of his ability. He'll kill as many people as he needs so he can save the day. That's the thing about heroes. Sometimes you have to become a monster first.
That sounds like fun.
It's only like 130 pages long. So if you're looking for a quick fix horror, that's kind of an homage to 80s and 90s movies. I mean, come on, we've all seen Mannequin. You know, this might fit the bill.
It sounds like fun. I need to read it.
It does.
So I'm going to suggest one that gave me 90s horror movie vibes. And I have read this one. And I really, like, I want to cover it on the show. But I also want to hang back from covering it on the show because it's supposed to come out on Netflix. It's supposed to come out on Netflix even this year, even this month. But I don't think it's going to happen. Really, I'm still like fingers crossed waiting and it's just going to come out. It's going to come out this month and it's going to be great.
Well, it's not on my Netflix because I have looked at the what's coming.
Yeah.
Thing is, with a Netflix movie as well, it means once it's on Netflix, it's on Netflix. It's not going to go off. And it means Netflix party.
Okay.
We should watch a bad horror movie, really.
So my suggestion is There's Someone Inside Your House by Stephanie Perkins. The summary is from Goodreads. Love hurts. Makani Young thought she'd left her dark past behind her in Hawaii, settling in with her grandmother in landlocked Nebraska. She's found new friends and has even started to fall for mysterious outsider Ollie Larson. But her past isn't far behind. Then, one by one, the students of Osborne High begin to die in a series of gruesome murders, each with increasingly grotesque flair. As the terror grows closer and her feelings for Ollie intensify, Makani is forced to confront her own dark secrets.
I like it.
So that's what I went with. It's a good story, too.
And Tintinet Web does not want to show any release for it. It is upsetting. I mean, there's a full cast and everything. It looks like it's being made.
Yeah, but the same thing happened with The Selection. I'm pretty sure that movie was made. But now they're starting over? I don't know. Anyway.
Who knows how TV companies really knows? Work? Not an executive.
No. So, that's it for this episode of Fictional Hangover. I'm Amanda, a.k.a. Punchy the Clown.
And I'm Claire, a.k.a. Itchy the Clown, a.k.a. Icky the Clown, a.k.a. Itchy Icky the Clown, a.k.a. Itchy Icky Clown.
Join us next time as we discuss Harrow Lake by Kat Ellis. Look out for the Would You Rather poll to go along with that book on social media. Don't forget about our book club and monthly challenges on Facebook. Be sure to visit our shop on Redbubble at fictionalhangover.redbubble.com for all your favorite Fictional Hangover-themed merchandise. And now, become a patron of ours on Patreon at patreon.com/fictionalhangover. Or support us on Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/fictionalhangover. Until next time, remember, the only cure for a fictional hangover is another book. Or a cleaver to the face.
That'll certainly kill off the fictional hangover you may be suffering from. You can find us at fictionalhangover.com, follow us on Instagram at fictionalhangover, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/fictionalhangover, and on Twitter at fictionalhangover, no ER. If you'd like this episode, check out our others and rate, review and subscribe so you don't miss out. And finally, special thanks to Liz Emerson for our music. You can find her on Facebook and Patreon. Thanks for listening.